Hello, hello, and welcome to the second episode of Pints of Football, where we bring to you our opinions and takes on the beautiful game that, to be fair, no one really asked for. I'm your host, Himanshu, the guy that got battered on his take for Manchester United last week. And then there's the other guy, Ayusha, by my side, who was, if I could say, battery. Is that how you call it? The guy who dealt the blows. Well, that kind of sounds wrong. Let's just proceed. Never mind. This week we discuss Chelsea. Do we trust the process or go for that quick fix? Before that, let's discuss the events of the week. Champions League roundup. PSG versus Bayern. Ayusha, what's your take on that?
Extremely tepid performance by PSG. They had a good first half. They created some chances, but clearly they had only one strategy, and that was play the long ball to Kylian Mbappe. And it kind of worked in the first half because Bayern were confused what to do. They were coming into this game at home with a 1-0 lead. And in the first half, it was almost like a game of chess where PSG were ready to play on the counter because they had the full game to themselves. Well, while Bayern wanted to be cautious and not concede a goal. But I think at halftime, once Nagelsmann tightened up the screws, you could see the difference straight away. Bayern came out with their usual high intensity pressing. And as the game went on, you knew PSG would make a mistake. Second half, Lionel Messi was nowhere to be seen. Kylian Mbappe was straight away out of the game. And at the end, for all the vanity that surrounds the Parisian project, it was just befitting that they crashed out again in the round of 16 at the end of an error from Marco Verratti. Moving on to Bruges versus Benfica, a massive aggregate difference, 7-1. Himanshu, what's your take?
Yeah, I think this was honestly a mismatch, right? Just purely in footballing terms. Bruges were lucky, in my opinion, to get into the round of 16. Their group was really bad. Atletico Madrid having really bad, poor form in the start of the season. And then they had, I think, Leverkusen, who were substandard, to be honest. And then there was Porto, who topped the group. So the Bruges really got lucky getting into the round of 16. And Benfica is Benfica, right? They were doing really well with Enzo Fernandez and now selling their star and still doing equally well, right? Benfica is probably what Brighton is to the Premier League, what Benfica is to the Champions League. So they will do well for now. So that's my take on it. Total mismatch.
These are the kind of stories, right? You won in the Champions League. Yes, Bruges got knocked out. They were outmuscled by Benfica, but for a club from Belgium to be in the round of 16, knocking out Leverkusen and Atletico Madrid, it's a beautiful story. And Bruges is a beautiful city if any of you ever get the chance to visit it. Yeah, now we can move on.
Yeah, now we move on to Tottenham Milan. What's your take on that?
Everything about Tottenham is just depressing right now. I think if there is any club in all of English football that is more depressing than Chelsea right now, I think it is Tottenham. And I can't believe that they were chasing a 1-0, one-goal deficit at home. Their XG was pathetic. I understand you want to start the game cautiously, entirely in the vein of how Antonio Conte likes to play. But even at the 80th minute, it literally felt like Tottenham would not make anything happen. It was not until the 92nd or the 93rd minute where Harry Kane got that one header which was blocked by the Milan goalkeeper. That was all they had to offer in front of their fans, chasing a 1-0 deficit in the only trophy that they had any chance to advance in. And that is when Harry Kane is entering the final year of his contract. Nothing seems to be going right at Tottenham. Absolutely nothing. And continuing this discussion, Himanshu, do you really think that Tottenham should try to persuade Antonio Conte to stay at the end of this season?
Conte next season, I think it's a mismatch. I think Conte wants to leave. Tottenham want to kind of get rid of him. So I think they'll find someone at the end of the season to replace Conte. But yeah, that's a big topic to cover altogether. Let's move on.
Pochettino back? Do you want Mauricio back at Tottenham?
You'll probably need Pochettino back at London for Chelsea. So let's see.
Send Potter to Tottenham and get Mauricio Pochettino to Chelsea.
That's something we'll look forward to in the summer for sure. But yeah, again, just to get back to the Tottenham-Milan game, right? Milan, the backdrop of dropping down from the Champions League places in Italy, they're doing really badly. And then to see Tottenham, a team that we watched so closely in the EPL, doing so badly against them, like, it brings in the question, right? Are we the real farmers at EPL? But yeah, and then we move on to Dortmund-Chelsea. But yeah, that's something we'll probably
cover. Blue is the colour, football is the game.
Well, that was surely not expected for Chelsea to go through. But we'll get back to Chelsea in more detail. Let's switch to the Europa League. Update on United. What's your take on what happened with United?
I mean, yeah, I enjoyed battering you in last week's episode, but we all expected United to come back in this game. Four goals I really didn't expect, considering how well Betis are doing in the La Liga. Goals from your usual stalwarts. Good to have Rashford back on the score sheet. I think Bruno needed a good performance and he put that in. And our own Bobo Weghorst, after the gaffer he had at Anfield, even nice to see him back on the score sheet also. I mean, he is a player with good intentions, and
I kind of felt bad for him. Yeah, everyone in the game wanted him to score. Right? It was so apparent when he scored, people were laughing. I could see, you know, like, apparently Lisandro Martinez still calls him Bobo. He did that. He's like, hey, Bobo. I could see him say that. You know, I could see him mouthing those words. It was really funny and good for Weghorst, right? Next, we move on to Arsenal and Sporting Lisbon.
2-2. I don't know how to read this, because on one hand, it's Arsenal. They're going away from home. Lisbon are a good team. So 2-2 draw on paper seems to be a good result. But at the end of the day, they are the Premier League leaders, Himanshu. They are leading this league ahead of City, ahead of Liverpool, ahead of United, ahead of Newcastle. So what would you say? 2-2 good enough for Arsenal, or do you think they underperformed?
I don't think they underperformed. What happened at Arsenal, to be honest, has kept all of their priorities for the Premier League, right? You could see they rested Ramsdale, they rested Partey. I think they rested one more player, not coming to my mind right now. But you could see they're kind of taking a backseat in Europa League. They're like, you know, whatever happens, happens. We want to focus on the Premier League. That's what it is, right? I think even Saka was kind of hobbling towards the end of the match, which was like a red flag. So yeah, it's good for Arsenal. I think they actually finish whatever they need to at home. So it's good enough as a result. But you're right. Again, right, if you see the Premier League leaders, it's the best league in the world as we claim it. Then drawing away to Sporting Lisbon sounds like we're the farmers. But yeah.
I think being the farmers league is the theme of the show today.
Yeah, I think so. Next, we move on to the Lineker incident, right? Lineker being suspended by the BBC for the tweet he made. What's your take on that, Ayusha?
So for those of you who are not aware, Gary Lineker is... You must have come across these YouTube videos. He's the show of the Match of the Day program on BBC, accompanied by Alan Shearer and Ian Wright. Now, the UK, we're going into politics a bit, but the UK government recently passed a policy where they said they would turn away migrants who are coming to the UK illegally on boats. A lot of these boats capsize, people die, and the people turning up on the show are people who really need asylum. Lineker went out and spoke out against the government's policy, comparing the government to the Nazis. The BBC in response initially said it would do nothing, but now it has actually temporarily removed Gary Lineker from the Match of the Day program, with rumblings coming around that they want to have certain control over what he expresses on social media. In response to Lineker's ban, his fellow colleagues, as I mentioned, Ian Wright, Alan Shearer, even Micah Richards, and a couple of people who are standbys on the show, they have all denied to come on the show, with the result that on today, as we speak on Saturday, right before the Premier League games kick off, there will be no hosts on the Match of the Day program. It will just be blank, and the BBC will move straight to coverage. Himanshu, this looks really bad, doesn't it? That in England, in a country of free speech.
Exactly. I mean, it feels like this would happen probably in India, right? For when you're presenting on like an Aaj Tak or in India Today or whatever. It's so surprising it happened with BBC, who are kind of the setting standards in the international journalistic, you know, industry. So I was really surprised that this happened.
Yeah, absolutely pathetic. And I really hope Lineker is back, because I really, really love him.
Yeah. Cool. Next, we move on to another very weird incident which happened over the week. Kyle Walker was moving around in the nightclub, flashing his private parts to the public. It was really weird, right? Because we see them as such, like, I don't know, mature players when they're playing on screen. And he's number one right back for England. He's number one right back for Man City, which some would argue is the best club in the world. And for him to be doing such a weird thing, right, in public, it was really shocking. It kind of begs to bring in the question, right? Why is Guardiola not coming out and doing something about it? Why is he not, you know, taking some action on this?
Yeah, because again, for those of you who are not aware, City's statement on this entire incident is that they're calling it a private matter, even though him exposing his private parts in public is no longer private. It's downright disgusting behavior. There might even be a police probe against Kyle Walker for public indecency. And I think why Guardiola or other City are not punishing him, and we know, right? Guardiola has been known to punish players who sometimes drink water when he does not want them to. to exaggerate things a bit. And I think one of the reasons he's doing it is City are really short of men in defense, right? And you look at it, John Stones injured, Cancelo out. He's already playing with Diaz, with Ake, with Akanji, again, a young defender. Rico Lewis sometimes plays holding midfield, sometimes plays on as a right back. So if Walker goes out, he really has no men in defense. So this whole handling of the situation by City to me is extremely appalling, that they have not taken a stance. And this is simply because, this is not because they truly believe in this being a private matter or not. It's simply because they're short of men in defense. And again, very bad handling of the situation. He shouldn't be allowed to get away with this.
So that covers the incidents of the week. Now we move on to the real, the big topic of this week, which is Chelsea.
The two-time Champions League winners, three-time Europa League winners, five-time Premier League winners, and the quarter-finalists in the UEFA Champions League.
You let me complete my introduction. This is going to be very difficult to question him in all this excitement. But yes, coming back to the question, Chelsea, do we trust the process or do we go for a quick fix? So Ayusha, first right, broadly, what's gone wrong at Chelsea this season?
Where do I start, Himanshu? I honestly underestimated the impact of the change of ownership, because Abramovich went out at the end, I think in February last year. I think there had been enough time for the new regime to come in to establish themselves, probably not get everything rolling, but still for everybody to get used to the fact that Roman Abramovich is gone, and the new ownership had given enough signals that they're willing to invest in the club. But everything after that has just been a straight down dumpster fire, right? Right from the decision to sack Thomas Tuchel. And you can question me on Tuchel later. I honestly do believe that Tuchel would not have won the Champions League, the Premier League for Chelsea. And I know it's not a popular opinion, but still, sacking Tuchel was not the right time, especially for a club in transition. And especially sacking him after you have spent on the entire summer transfer window based on his opinions and getting the players that he wanted. That to me, I think, was the first problem. And the second problem has simply been Graham Potter's assignment. I know everybody views him as this next rising Pochettino who's going to transform another manager from a small club who's coming to the big leagues and will make himself known, an English manager on the big stage. But I honestly never viewed him as the right man for the job. His Brighton team could also barely score goals. And all that buy players for cheap and then grow them. I think at a big club, you have to be able to balance both. You can't just focus on buying cheap players and growing them. A lot of times you have to work with the bigger players straight away, established players. And I never thought Potter was the man for the job. And on top of that, his football has been so boring, I can't even tell you. And I know I'm going on a ramble, but you know what happens when I watch Chelsea games? You know, in the Harry Potter movies, every character who hates Harry Potter, they have a unique way of saying the name Potter in with disgust. It's like Potter. His games are so boring to watch that I keep uttering his names in these different accents with disgust just to keep myself hooked onto the game. And I mean he is the problem. Graham Potter is the problem. There are other problems, but on top of all of that, I think he has had enough time. He's been there for enough months and he's done far too little with this Chelsea team.
I think that's pretty much what we're seeing, right? A big league manager is a big league manager. That very few actually make it from the bottom and, you know, achieve something right at the top. If you look at even Ralf Rangnick, right, when he came into United, or Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. So I'm just speaking from the heart here. You really want these people to kind of succeed, because firstly, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is a legend at the club, right? You want him to do something great. Ralf Rangnick is a scholar of football, as he was called, and a professor of football, right? He was called, and it wasn't what happened at United, right? You really need a big club manager at a big club to achieve things, and really take someone very special, like a Klopp, right, who came from a Dortmund to Liverpool to do those things. And you need to give him time plus having that something special. And I'm not sure whether Chelsea has time, nor do I think Potter has something special.
See, the owners have been giving him time. I think 2 wins in 15 games before the past 2 wins, right? 2 wins in 15 games is unacceptable for a Chelsea manager. I think it will be unacceptable as most clubs in the top 10. Forget about it being Chelsea. But coming to the point of big managers or managers for big clubs, look at this Chelsea team. This is not necessarily a team of big egos, right? Right. It's not like United where you have Bruno and you have Cristiano and you have Harry Maguire. I can't believe I'm calling him a big name.
Right.
You look at this Chelsea team, you never hear of dressing room problems, right? Who's the big ego in this team?
True.
They're all players who are still relatively young. Thiago Silva is the senior man in this team. But again, he's such a nice personality. So it's not like he's dealing with a dressing room who are pushing back against him. Again, you have seen the Chelsea dressing rooms of the past and the big egos and the big personalities. In the past dressing rooms, if he wasn't a win, if he had 2 wins out of 15 games, the dressing room would have turned against him by now.
Right.
So it's not like he's dealing with a particularly difficult dressing room, and still this is what he's delivering on the pitch.
But how about the squad size, Ayusha? They have like 30 plus players right now, and it's really difficult to manage these, like, such a big squad of players. No big names for sure, as you said, right? There are a couple of big names, but they're not kind of, you know, mapped to these egos like we had Bruno, Ronaldo, etc. These people are good personality people. So what's going on? Is he not able to manage this huge squad of 31 players?
See, honestly, managing a big squad of 31 players is an extremely tough task. But I also believe that Graham Potter would have had input into this entire recruitment process, right? Because if you look, all the people who worked with him at Brighton for recruitment, they are all now at Chelsea working with him. This is very different from the summer transfer window where Todd Boehly was going around meeting agents in person and hanging off the back of George Mendes to meet whichever player that he could. Potter has his team in place.
So you're saying Potter had his say in this transfer market. So the big squad
definitely,
size that we have
definitely
is on Potter, not on Todd Boehly.
It is also on Boehly, but it is extremely naive to think that Potter did not have any say in the January transfer window.
Right. I mean, that's one way to see it, right? A big club manager, in my opinion, like, for example, a Ten Hag as we have right now, right? He has full control over recruitment. I just feel, just because I understood Todd Boehly's behavior and read a lot about him, I don't think he would have relinquished that much control to Potter, who's still an up and coming manager. But fair to say, I mean, he could have had some say on recruitment. In my opinion, not that much. In your opinion, a lot. So let's kind of move on from there, right? Let's look at playing style. Let's look at the on-the-field performance. How did Potter start out from his initial days when he, you know, took over from Tuchel? And now to what we're seeing right now post January, 5-6 signings or more than that, I'm guessing, that you had.
See, I think what Thomas Tuchel left Chelsea at, or rather when Tuchel walked into Chelsea, it's also important of the messaging he gave. When he came in, Chelsea were leaking goals. And even then, at that point of time, he made a very bullish statement where Tuchel said, we will become a team that is extremely hard to beat. And that is what Tuchel left Chelsea as. And I think when you read that statement, I never interpreted it as we'll be a team which will win every game, but you'll have to really sweat it out against us. And I think that's the classic making of a very good cup team.
Would you say it's still happening right now? Because they're not conceding as much, right?
No, so under two, again, moving from, so that's where I think when Potter started, right, the DNA of the Tuchel team was there. The DNA of the Tuchel style was there. That intensity was still there. And I think that intensity kind of rode him through the opening couple of games. And specifically after that defeat against Brighton, that 4-0 defeat against Brighton is when things started going downhill. I think he maybe accelerated this shift to the Potter style of football at Chelsea. And not that there's anything wrong with the Potter style of football, apart from the fact that it couldn't even score enough goals at Brighton. It is further all the more not suited to the players that he has at Chelsea. And again, and this comes back to what Ten Hag did at United, right? Ten Hag tried his way of football. He realized it doesn't work with the squad, so he shifted very quickly. Potter just did not change. He kept on trying to do what he did at Brighton. He kept on rotating his lineup every game. He was playing Sterling in some games down the middle, some games on the right, some games on the left. You know, it was like he was trying to do too many things. And even when the results started going downhill, he literally did not change anything. It's not like we were seeing a lot of shots from outside the box. It's not like we were putting in a lot of crosses into the box. Every game was turning out to be play out from the back, then do some lateral passing. And after that, up front, nobody was trying to run between the lines. It was always, okay, now play the ball down to the bylines and then somehow cross into the striker. It was almost like we have to create the goal in the perfect way. And amongst all of that, we are now such an important team, right? And a lot of that Tuchel intensity is now lost because Potter teams don't necessarily press and play football.
Right.
So what is happening now is teams know that we are important going up front, and if they can keep us quiet for 60, 65 minutes
and then get that lucky goal,
they know they'll have a chance against us. They'll be alive in the game.
I think it's the curse of the XG, right? I mean, what Potter had at Brighton was really good XG, but they were underperforming on goals. You could argue they were underperforming because they didn't have, like, you know, really the good strikers that they had. I think they had Mope, who was a bit of a dirty player than an actual player, to be honest. And then I think, yeah, not many big names. Even right now, they have Ferguson, I think, who's an up-and-coming English striker, but nothing beyond that. But De Zerbi is getting a lot out of him. So they had a lot of XG at Brighton, but they were not getting as many goals. Compared to what they have right now, they have excellent players, right? Maybe not that proper top number nine, but they have excellent players, really good names. But they're still not getting those goals. Are you saying maybe Chelsea are not adapting to what Potter is saying? Do they not maybe respect him as much as they probably respected Tuchel to change their ways, to completely adapt to what Potter expects them to do?
See, I'm glad you brought up the XG point, right? He had a terrible XG at Chelsea. Across all the games that we have played this season, Chelsea have had an XG of more than 2 in only one game this season. A team which won the Champions League 2 years back, which almost knocked out Real Madrid last year, is a top 4 Premier League team.
That's a steep decline.
Yeah, cannot be. In terms of goals scored this season, we are 14th or 15th in the table. While in terms of goal conceded, we are still the 3rd or the 4th best defence in the league. And you know how this works, right? If you concede enough goals, you will get relegated from the Premier League. If you can't score enough goals, you will never move up the table in the Premier League. And that's where Chelsea are stuck.
Right in the middle, right? 10th
yeah,
place.
Exactly. And I understand about players adapting, but as I keep on saying, at some point of time, Potter also needs to realize, right? So look at his team right now. Central defense is pretty much sorted. With Thiago Silva, he can either play Badiashile or he can play Koulibaly. Now in Reece James and Ben Chilwell, now that they are both fit, he has probably among the top wing backs in the entire Premier League. And these are players who like to run down the flanks. They like to run down the flanks, they like to whip in crosses. Chilwell still likes to come in a bit, but Reece James loves to run up and down the flank. In the middle of the park, he has Enzo now. But even when he didn't have Enzo, he had Jorginho, he had Mason Mount. He was some games playing Gallagher, he was playing Loftus-Cheek. Up front again, he has Kai Havertz. On the left, he has Sterling. On the right, he has Ziyech now. Now Sterling likes to come in, right? He likes to come in. He likes to play between the lines. But in most games, he was playing Sterling out extremely wide. That does not make sense, especially considering Chilwell behind him also likes to play out. Now, if Sterling is playing out, you are taking away all the lethal part of Chelsea, which was there last season, where you could see how many goals Chilwell and Reece James were scoring, right? Similarly, on the right flank, he's playing Ziyech and he's asking him to come inside. Now, Ziyech, unlike Sterling, does not like to come inside. He's a player who likes to play on the wing. Now, if Ziyech is playing on the wing, he's taking away all that space for Reece James to operate in. And we can, without a doubt, say that Reece James is probably the only truly world-class player in this Chelsea team, maybe apart from Thiago Silva. So even Reece James' entire movement is cut out, right? And on top of that, now in centre, he's playing Kai Havertz as a lone striker. For Havertz, he has never played so many games in an entire season. This is the first time for him, and he's a 23-year-old player. And he does so many things, right? He has such tenacity, he plays with intensity, loves to get physical, can hold the ball. He drops back and distributes the ball. Similar things to what Kane and Benzema do. I understand he's not scoring as many goals, but again, he's a player who will really thrive if people are bouncing off of him, right? And this is a mistake which even Tuchel made, where he did not allow Havertz and Werner to link properly together. And it's the same mistake what Potter is making.
So what kind of player would probably, you know, Havertz play very brilliantly out of? Hypothetically. Without names, just the profile of what player.
Okay, let me just say, a profile of player, again, who's extremely quick, who can play between the lines, and who is very nimble with his feet, right? So somebody like Sterling, if he's constantly asked to play between the lines, he can easily bounce up very well with Havertz. But again, you're realizing the problem. He plays Sterling out, and therefore he's destroying that linkage.
Right.
He's playing Ziyech through the lines on the right side, whereas Ziyech cannot play that style. So even no matter how much they want, the two of them cannot link together.
I was asking you about Havertz, right? To be honest, I was really hoping you would say a proper number nine, a guy who can hold up the ball, a guy who has a really powerful strike, and a guy who has Premier League pedigree. And I was supposed to say Lukaku, and then you were supposed to, yeah, I can see it in your face. Really disappointed, but that's someone you'll be bringing back to the club probably.
I will not entirely disagree with you on the Lukaku point.
Uh-huh.
And the Lukaku failure is as much on Lukaku, I think, as much as it is on Thomas Tuchel.
Right.
Because he went out and spent that £100 million on that striker, and he hardly gave him any chances. I think by November, December, he was frozen out of the team. And Tuchel should have realized that Lukaku, for everybody saying he's like the next Didier Drogba, he is not a Drogba type player. Drogba was a nimble striker, yeah. I mean, who could play off people or who could stay alone the entire game and still score goals. Lukaku needed somebody to bounce off him, and that's when Tuchel did not try to do that.
Right. And so quick question, Lukaku back at the club next season or not?
I think the player he was is now gone. I think he's a player who strives on a lot of confidence, and I don't think now is the time to get him back to the club. Whether we can truly offload him in a way which makes financial sense is a separate issue, since Inter's finances are in tatters and they can't afford him unless Chelsea bear a lot of the wages. But I think trying to integrate Lukaku back would be a really bad idea.
So that's a no.
We have brought something new to the episodes this week onwards. It's called the Bobo Moment of the Week.
And so here's where we kind of thought we'd discuss something really silly and stupid which happens in our beautiful game of football. Of course, when we start with the Bobo moment, it has to start from the OG Bobo, Weghorst himself.
Himanshu, before the 7-0 drubbing which began last week at Anfield, while walking out of the players' tunnel, Weghorst appeared to touch the "This is Anfield" sign along with all the other Liverpool players. And then to top it off, he gave his justification was that he touched the sign to throw off Virgil van Dijk.
I think...
What was going on?
See, I respect Weghorst a lot just because of the work rate he puts in, right? He's so crucial to our team. So maybe I am biased in this. I kind of believe his explanation. He is a little bit of that, you know, dirty kind of a player. Tries to put people off. That's the origin.
What, he was trying to curse van Dijk's touch?
He was trying to maybe, you know, put off his hand or something and kind of missed. And then he had a little bit of a brain fart, I would say, and happened to touch the Anfield sign. There are also claims that he is actually a Liverpool fan. There are some excerpts from interviews long back where he's saying he is a Liverpool fan. So that kind of brings in a question to the moment as well. But yeah, there you kind of have it. The Weghorst.
I don't buy his explanation one bit. He wanted to touch that Anfield sign. He never knows where he'll get to play at the top level again.
That's the beauty of the Bobo moment of the week. Everyone can have their opinions. No one's right. No one's wrong.
Everyone's a Bobo.
Now, just for the record, we're recording before the Leicester game. The last two games Chelsea have faced, Chelsea 2, Dortmund 0. Chelsea 1, Leeds 0. So there have been two wins. What happens next? Is this... Have you turned the corner? Do you think this is where Chelsea season goes up?
I think nothing can rescue our Premier League position, right? Because I really do not care about the Europa League spots. So missing out on the Europa League, I think, is better for Chelsea next season, lesser games.
There's Conference League, never won that.
No. I think I'm okay with being below the Conference. We cannot... We really shouldn't be playing these games next season. And to make a proper sustained top 4 charge, you'll probably have to win some 10 out of the last 12 or 13 games, which I do not see happening with this team. So I have no expectations in the league. The Champions League is an entirely separate issue. I think this is a team which has won the Champions League before, which put in a really good performance last year also. So I think this whole squad, no matter what Potter tries to do, will also be able to motivate themselves and be able to get together for that one game, right? Because Champions League, what is left now? It's you have to get together only for one night. And we need just one great night in the quarters and we might be in the semis. We need one great night in the semis, we might be in the finals. So Champions League is everything I care about. And that, honestly, I'm still feel that we can't even beat Benfica now if we draw them in the quarters. But Champions League is the only thing I care about. But no, this is not some Potter magic working, because even against Leeds, our XG was below 1 in the entire game. And we must remember, we scored through a Fofana header. A defender had to score a header and bail us out. Even against Dortmund in the Champions League, after we scored the goal, our XG was less than one. And even against Dortmund, we started the game out really well, but you could see that the attacking chances reducing as the games went on. So it's not like something drastic is changing at the club, but yes, the wins are good for the confidence of the players, especially considering we have at least some Champions League games to look forward to.
Essentially, just saying there's just a couple of wins, nothing's going to change. And maybe in the Champions League, people would kind of play the occasion. Similar to what they did under Tuchel, right? He came in halfway through the season. He knew that Champions League is something he can attempt because he really had good players. Just was one or two games, right? You just get them right, you probably win the cup.
No, but see, there was some difference with Tuchel because the performances were there everywhere. When he came...
Right, the performance was consistent through all the...
Consistent, exactly. Yeah. It's not like we just won the Champions League.
Right.
Chelsea also finished fourth in the table. Chelsea were also in the finals of the FA Cup. I think Carabao Cup also, we made it to the later stages. We beat City in the league. We beat
Arsenal
in the league.
Consistency, you would say.
Yes.
So yeah, that's different. So
the team as a whole was stable. Whereas here, this is more like when Chelsea won the Champions League for the first time, right? Like,
yeah.
You remember how tatters the team was in under Roberto Di Matteo. We finished the league 6, but we still scraped by somehow to Champions League victory.
Right.
This season, that's our only hope, honestly.
Yeah, that's probably the best you can hope for.
Exactly. Right. And it really helps that right now, no team in Europe is truly firing on all cylinders. Mm-hmm. Not even Bayern Munich, not even City, not even Milan, not even Benfica. So there is still some hope. But yeah, I'm being extremely optimistic.
If I'm reading from all that you're saying, right, a lot of blame is being put on Potter. Not much on management, not much on the players either. So if not Potter, right, who would you want the club right now with the situation that they're in right now, with the roster of players that they have right now, as well as their league position? Who would be the good fit for them?
See, I have two answers to this and both are extremely opposing choices. So I don't know how you want to read them.
Mm-hmm.
On one side, I definitely think Mauricio Pochettino is the kind of manager who can really come to this club and who can make things work. I understand Chelsea is a really big club. The pressure is high, but at the same time, he has experience of building a team in the Premier League. He has done it with Tottenham. He has a much better profile of players here. He does not have the egos that he had at PSG to deal with. So I really think he can get this club back. He can build a defensively solid team who can also go ahead and score goals, because Tottenham were scoring goals under them. And again, they were not scoring goals only one way, right? They were scoring goals on the counter. At the same time, they were scoring those goals with a lot of interlinking and passages of play. So I think he's a really, really good person for the job. On the opposite end of the spectrum, another manager with proven pedigree, not in the Premier League, but in world football, is becoming free. And his name is Diego Simeone. Now I know Yao Felix will extremely hate this because he came to Chelsea to get away from Simeone. But Simeone also might be somebody who is actually needed at this club to tighten up everything, increase the work rate, make the team extremely solid. And he has been known to work with good strikers also. So maybe as a transition manager for the next 2-3 years, I think he will also be welcome. And this is a club again, which historically has done very well with managers who have not been exactly flashy in the way they play, but who have kept everything tight, right? Because even if you look at Antonio Conte, the team was extremely tight and the only outlet was Fabregas, Eden Hazard, and then the impact finishes from Diego Costa. And obviously Willian was there, but these were all players apart from Hazard with a very, very high work rate. So I think this is something which has worked at this club before. It's probably in the DNA of this club. And you can argue that maybe all we need is two players, maybe one in midfield and a striker like maybe Victor Osimhen in front.
I can't believe a Chelsea fan saying they need more players, but yeah, please go on.
We can definitely trim the squad and these are two managers. These are the two managers I think for me.
So Pochettino, I would probably agree because he can work with young folks and kind of bring up the club, right? He's done that at Tottenham. I was very shocked with your opinion about Diego Simeone because again, Diego Simeone's squad, I mean, of course, a lot of discipline, a lot of hardworking people, a lot of warriors in the squad that he can build. He doesn't work with the youth, is my opinion. And also, we're struggling with goals right now. Atletico Madrid is not a very attacking team. They kind of built on striker's pedigree, right? Every season they have an amazing striker who can do very well for them. But without that striker that you probably have at Chelsea right now, I think maybe Diego Simeone is a misfit.
But see, the thing with Simeone is, he's also won the league now two or three times. Mm-hmm. He won the league at a time when there was this unbreakable duopoly of Madrid and Barcelona.
Correct.
And that team still managed to score goals also. It's not like they didn't score goals. He won the league 1 or 2 years back, I believe, again with Suarez heading the team. And I genuinely believe, obviously, Atletico's performance have deteriorated and they've become more dull to watch over the past 2 years than or compared to the rest of his tenure. But I think it's also because he's been there a long time. It seems to be like an end of a cycle. I really believe a new challenge, a new club, a new environment will really help him and will also provide him that boost and a much needed jolt to Chelsea. That being said, how he gels with Todd Boehly will be a whole different issue and circus to look forward to.
That those are two egos who should probably never clash. Are there any rumours, by the way, of Chelsea approaching a Poch or a Diego Simeone? Or is this your hope?
This has been my fantasy and I'm pretty sure if Dortmund had defeated us, you would be hearing these things in the news.
Right. Moving on, Ayusha, let's look at two players who have been very important for Chelsea, right? Mount and Conte. Both of their contracts are up for discussion. Mount's expiring next season, Kante's expiring in a couple of months. So what do you have to say about these two? Renew or not?
I think two different situations, and I would love to hear your thoughts on Kante. Mason Mount, I really believe Chelsea have to do everything possible to keep him.
Mm-hmm.
Because Mount is a player, I think, who can do everything across the pitch. He can score goals, he can create goals, he can even play as a deep-lying midfielder if you want him to. And every team he is, or every manager who has worked in England or at Chelsea has always played him. So it means there is something he is doing right a lot. Secondly, he has so many years ahead of him. We don't even know his full potential yet. And you simply cannot let him go to a Liverpool or a Manchester United or to a close rival at such a young age. And I am saying this in spite of the fact that Mount sometimes frustrates me. Sometimes I do believe he plays too many lateral passes. It sometimes he just forgets that he can make that run into the box or he can take a shot from outside the box. But we've also seen him do this in patches every season. So I think the right manager who provides him with the right messaging maybe keeps telling him to, okay, every game just go into the box, because he's also been asked to play different roles, right? Even within a season under the same manager. So I think with proper direction, there's also more goals in him and there's so much to be untapped with him. And secondly, he's a Chelsea boy, he's Chelsea born and bred. You just have to keep Mason Mount no matter what happens, no matter what Potter says or no matter what anybody says. Mount's contract has to be renewed. It's as simple as that. Coming to N'Golo Kante, I don't know how to read the situation. I genuinely believe that this year when Kante has been fit, he is by far the best holding midfielder in the world. And that is something to say, because we cannot say that about any player in the Premier League. Very few players in the Premier League across any team, that they are unanimously the best in their position. That being said, he's injured too much. He's 32, 33. He is getting fit, but we don't know again when he'll get injured. And what I'm hearing is that the club are offering him a 3-year deal right now, which seems too much.
3 years, way too much for what?
I know, yeah. But with him, you know, there's always this fear that what if there's one good season left in him?
Right. And what if a rival gets him?
And you know what one good season of Kante can deliver. Again, right. Maybe not the Premier League, but it can definitely get you something like the Champions League. So that fear is always there. But yes, given the size of the squad, and I genuinely, if we go through the squad, getting rid of some of these players is going to be extremely tough given the length of their contracts. I think Chelsea at the max should offer him a 2-year deal with the option of an extension if the club wants. But 3 years, no way, I think. As much as it pains me, especially if he is going outside of England, I think Chelsea should let him go.
Yeah, Kante is also one of those very easy to maintain players. He's never going to get trouble
exactly
on the field or off the field, right?
Yes.
So probably a good person to have around the club.
Yes.
But probably doesn't bring in a lot of leadership. I don't think he's very vocal within the club. Right?
Yes,
he's
more by example.
Exactly.
He leads by example.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if leadership by example is something that Chelsea lack right now. Maybe they need someone vocal out there. Also, Kante, he's so injury prone, as you said, right?
Yes.
I just don't see him being of value to Chelsea, especially when they need to kind of have a little bit more cash flow to kind of, you know, make sure they're abiding by FFP, which I'm really shocked that they're not in trouble yet. Moving on, let's just look at the Chelsea lineup, right? I mean, this question, I really want to bring it up because of the sheer number of options you have right now. Who's making it to your ideal 11?
The current squad right now, you're saying.
Right.
I think Kepa has to stay in goal. He's redeemed himself from all the horrors of the previous season.
I've seen personally how you changed your opinion about
exactly.
him.
Exactly. Very, very few players have made me change their opinion about them. Kepa is one of them. And he's really doing well. He's been just one of the star performers this season. I can't imagine him making any errors. It's straightforward. Mendy's form is bad. He's doing some shenanigans around his contract. He's injured. I think Kepa is the man. Way to go. Thiago Silva, I don't think anybody has any doubts that he should be starting. I still think Koulibaly should play next to Thiago Silva because Badiashil is young. There should be a bit of rotation between the two of them so that Badiashil also gets to learn from Thiago Silva. And next season, we should keep Silva, probably play him less, and he can then groom Badiashil and Koulibaly together to be the players.
But I don't think there's much of an argument behind centre-backs. These people are, I mean, as you said, Chelsea yes. are not leaking goals, right?
Yes.
It's a quick...
Even the wing-backs, I mean, if they are fit, Chilwell and Reece James have to play. Chilwell has been injury prone over the past couple of seasons, past two seasons. But again, if they are fit, they have to play. And I would love to see nothing of Cucurella.
Even after
anywhere.
The Dortmund game.
Again, the Dortmund game, people are saying, right, that he pulled off a masterstroke by playing him on the left side of defense.
Uh-huh.
He didn't have players. Thiago Silva was injured. Badiashil, he has not picked in the Champions League squad because of our overbloated
right.
squad.
Right.
So he had no options except to play Cucurella on the left side of the on the left side of defense. So
right.
I think the defense is sorted. In that midfield, if Kante is fit, Kante plays. Otherwise, it has to be Enzo. It has to be Yao Felix. I think it has to be Mount.
Otherwise, it's Enzo. So even if Kante is fit and Enzo is fit, you
then
think
both
Kante,
will play.
Both
will
right.
play.
So you have two sitting midfielders.
Yeah, and Enzo, if you look at him, he does not exactly like to sit back. He is not like a Jorginho who will sit at the shield in front of the defense.
Right.
He likes to run with the ball, similar to what Kante does. So you'll have like two tanks or two bowls of energy moving up and down the pitch. And
right.
Enzo has a lot to offer going forward also,
right.
which currently he is not able to do also due to the lack of the players.
Right.
So these two have to start if they are fit. And then I think Mason Mount has to start. Even if Yao Felix is at the club next season, I think Mason Mount absolutely has to start games. Up front, we have no options apart from Kai Havertz. So I think he has to play. On the left, Sterling. I think a fit Sterling who's asked to play between the lines has 10 to 15 goals in him a season. He's been unfit, but I think he was actually a good buy by Chelsea. And I still think he has two or three good seasons ahead of him. And on the right side of the pitch, right now is where we have some problems because I don't necessarily think Ziyech fits the mold of this Chelsea team. So if Pulisic were fit, I would play Pulisic probably. No Aubameyang. Definitely not playing Aubameyang.
What's interesting is you have only used one new signing that they made in the Potter era, right? Just Enzo Fernandez. No Mudryk. None of them.
No, Mudryk, I still think, again, if Mudryk can play on the right, as I said, on the right-hand side of the field, in terms of attacking options, we genuinely are weak.
No, but I
even
think he's predominantly
accept.
A
yes.
left winger, so yeah.
Yes. So I think Mudryk has to be worked in. He's way far from being an out-and-out week-and-week starter, and that is where I think, having had him at the earlier part of the season where there are some games in the Carabao Cup or in the FA Cup earlier rounds to give him game time would have helped. Actually, this part of the season is now good considering we have nothing to play for in the Premier League. He can rotate his squad more in the league, give Mudryk more minutes, which he has not done in the past couple of games. I mean, I understand because he's under pressure, but he has to work Mudryk into the team. And
yeah.
truly, that's I think is a test of Potter, that he is really this guy who can build players. Looking at how he works with Mudryk, how he works with Maduke, how he works with Broha, how he works with these players will be the real test. But yeah.
How about Fofana, Koulibaly and Badiashil? Koulibaly, there's been so much, all his errors have been so well documented. Would you still put a Koulibaly over a Badiashil?
As of now, yes, I would still. I think Koulibaly has had a rough start to the league, but he's a very, very good He's a very, very good defender. He has a lot of years of pedigree and experience after him. And working and playing alongside Thiago Silva genuinely helps, even from a club transition standpoint, right? Silva will not be playing games next season. So you all the more need Koulibaly to start being more and more confident so that he can then start working with Badiashil. And again, if James and Chilwell are fit, the defense in general will be very, very secure. So, and Badiashil has been outstanding in the Premier League, by the way.
Right.
So
I'm not even presenting this question to you, but I'm very sure if it's Fofana, Wesley Fofana as against Thiago Silva, it's Thiago Silva, right?
Right,
Fofana
now, definitely Thiago Silva, yes.
Right.
That central defense grooming needs to happen between this season and next season, because again, Silva cannot play every game.
So Aisha, what are your expectations from the rest of the season?
I honestly couldn't care less about the Premier League, as I mentioned to you earlier. I really don't want us to finish in the Europa League spot. You know, I don't just want us to be barely make it 7th or 6th. You know, if he can win 10 or 10 games out of the remaining games and it looks like we can somehow miraculously get top 4 and then we miss, it's fine. But I don't want him pushing the team for a 7th place finish or a 6th place finish.
But you understand that's likely to happen. That's how it
I just don't want that. So Premier League, I really don't care unless it's a byproduct of barely missing out of the top 4 and we go on a great run of games.
So but Champions League?
Champions League, obviously, I would love to win it. But if he gets us to the semi-finals, I will just be more than happy.
So that's success for you.
That is success. That is, and frankly, the only area where I'll give Graham Potter credit is the Champions League. Because when Tuchel got sacked, I think we had lost 2 games. Then we had to play Milan 2 games back-to-back. Then we had to beat Zagreb. And I'm forgetting the 4th team in our league, in our group. But he won all of them. And he has gotten us here. So yeah, Champions League is the only area where I give him some credit. And yes, a semi-final. And it will be very tough because I don't think we can beat any of the teams.
Right.
Which will most likely be a part of the other 4 teams. But yeah, semi-final will be very great.
And expectations from next season. Before that, would you want Chelsea to finish in Europa League or a Conference League place? Because that would kind of be a distraction, right? For what you want to achieve next season.
Yeah, that's why I'm again and again saying I really don't want us to be playing for the Europa League. It absolutely makes no sense.
Yeah, you'll have those Thursday night trips to Eastern Europe that you have to come back from and then focus on the league again. Would you want that? At least to kind of, you know, maybe let's say you have a big squad next season as well, right? You'll have to kind of get these youngsters running. So would you want Europa League or Conference League for that reason?
No, I still think it's an unnecessary distraction. And right. If you look at Chelsea historically, whenever we have been there in the Europa League, we do end up going far. It becomes an unnecessary long season with 54, 55 games.
Right.
So I really don't want us to be caught in the Europa League. No, and especially not the Conference League. Not at all. Really not at all. If he wants to give young player the chance, the next 10 games, 12 right. games are the chance.
So without that distraction, where do you think Chelsea will be next season in the Premier League?
Honestly, with a club like Chelsea, no matter what happens in a particular season, next season you have to aim to challenge for the title. And I know from this point, even if we really get a good striker who can bang in 20-25 goals, we will not win the league. It is just not going to happen. But we have to challenge for the league. We have to, like, top 4 shouldn't be something we are fighting for. Top 4 should be a byproduct of failing to challenge for the title. So right. As we mentioned for United, right, we have to be within 10 points of the league, leaders. We simply have to be. It is absolutely unacceptable. And especially if Potter is there. If Potter is there next year, I really doubt it will happen. But all the more if Potter is there, he will further have no excuses because this squad will get trimmed down in the summer. He will have a whole pre-season. You remember, right? 2 weeks back, he was complaining that the team had a bad pre-season. He was complaining about something which happened in April, May. Don't even get me started. I digress.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, we have to be within 10 points of the champions.
With that pre-season, he has no excuses. What about a cup, an EFL or a FA Cup? Would that make you happy? Would that be something Chelsea would be happy with?
Again, Himanshu, you've known me for a very long time. I couldn't care less about the FA Cup or the Carabao Cup. Nothing to do with United winning it. with these trophies, it's more like if you don't get knocked out till the semis, then you might as well give in your all to win. But yeah, I mean, if we get out before the semis, I really wouldn't hold him. I mean, if tomorrow Luton or Barnsley or Wrexham, for example, were to knock us out in the early stages of these tournaments, I really wouldn't hold it against the manager or the players.
Right. I just feel because it's such a new set of players, right? Winning something together as a team will kind of help motivate them to go ahead in other more important cups. But yeah, that kind of remains.
Trust me, if they are second or third in the league, this time next year, they will not be crying that they're not at Wembley, not playing the Carabao Cup. And I mean, everybody complains that Tottenham have not won a silverware, right? I really don't think it matters. You remember that stretch in between where Tottenham were always in the Champions League and Arsenal were not making it?
Under Pochettino, yeah.
Yes. For those stretch of years, Tottenham were the better club than Arsenal. It didn't matter if Arsenal won the FA Cup or they made it to a Europa League final. Being and playing in the Champions League is the be all and end all, and above that is the title. These are the two big things. I think the moment you shift the goalpost to the other two trophies, you're kind of lowering your standard. That's why I'm saying the other two trophies can be a byproduct. You can be playing well throughout the season, and then if you end up in a position where you're in the semis or finals, then it feels bad to be knocked, to lose. But earlier rounds, I really don't think it matters. The goalposts or the targets have to be top four and challenging for the title. Well, what do you think? Do you think we can make it to the champion? You're not a Chelsea fan. I feel sad for you. But do you think Chelsea will be able to make it to the semi-finals?
This season, it is actually likely, as you said, right? The Champions League match is a one-off, very isolated occasion. If they get that right, it is possible.
What about next season?
Next season will be another story, right? Again, Potter, I don't think he's a big club manager. I think he's a manager with a lot of ideas. He can probably make a very good assistant manager at a top four club. I just don't think he has the kind of pedigree to kind of, you know, command the respect that he does of all these players who expect so much from their careers, who are so skilled. So for that reason, I really don't think Chelsea will even persist with him next season. Let's see what happens. Yeah, so that's my take on it, and not being a Chelsea fan and kind of really hoping it doesn't work out for them. So yeah, there we have it, our second episode of Pints of Football, discussing what one guy in this room thinks is the biggest club in London. Let's see what they have to do for next season, right? Maybe they pull off an Arsenal, they go up, they top the league. You never know what could happen. Maybe Potter then becomes an Arteta, right? Who is ridiculed so much.
There is no bigger insult than being called pulling off an Arsenal.
So there you have it. That's our episode for today. If you liked it, please share and subscribe and spread the word about us two bobos. Until next time, take care and goodbye.